Welcome. I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. We will start off today with House Bill 2299, then go to House Bill 3298, and then House Bill 2939. I'd like to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2299. Linda?
House Bill 2299 requires the school district in which a public charter school is located to be responsible for identifying, locating, and evaluating students to determine which students may be in need of special education and related services, provides for the distribution of state funding to the school district for those services, requires notice to the parents related to special education and related services when a student enrolls in the public charter school or is no longer enrolled in the charter school, declares an emergency July 1st, 2011.
Thank you. We have a few people signed up. Gary Temple, Cindy Hunt, Andor Morgan, and Karen Hikes.
They're the ones working on the amendment, so Cindy and Morgan.
Cindy Hunt, Department of Education. The bill that's in front of you today is similar to a bill that this committee heard last session. And what it addresses is special education students who attend charter schools but yet who reside outside of the sponsoring school district. We know that in Oregon there are approximately 18,000 students who attend charter schools. But for the 484, approximately, that live outside of their sponsoring district and receive special ed services, they're treated differently as far as who's responsible for providing services. Under the current law, it makes the resident district responsible for the special ed services, while the charter school is responsible for the general educational services. What this has given rise to is disputes between districts, between schools and districts. One of the issues is that the key components in charter school law is that charter schools are accountable to their sponsoring districts. Whereas when we get into students who reside in another district, the charter school isn't necessarily accountable or doesn't necessarily have a relationship, you know, with that district. And the district doesn't have a relationship with them until the student enrolls. And so that's given rise to issues out there. So in the last couple of years, this was the topic at our OSBA work group that I know Senator Bonamici participated in, and Karen participated, and Superintendent Temple, and I'm sure there's some other people behind me all participated. And so, and I know that we heard from people, we dedicated one of the meetings, in fact, to special ed services for charter schools because of all the issues that were heard out there. And so this is also a consensus product. When the bill was in the House, it was amended. And the way the bill came out of the House, there are some issues around it being consistent with other bills that have already passed this session. We also want to make it consistent with other law. We want to also streamline the process. We don't have the amendments in front of you today, but I know that we are very willing to come back and talk to you at a later time about those. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Oregon School Boards Association. And I don't have too much to add to what Cindy said. As she said last session, the Senate passed Senate Bill 71 in a 30-0 vote. So you all have voted for this concept. And what it really is about, it's about equity. It's about treating any student who enrolls at a charter school the same as any other student. And right now we have this small subset of students who have IEPs, who have special education needs, who go to a charter school that's not in their resident district, and we treat them differently than the other 18,000 kids in our charter schools. And I would just add, I think, to what Cindy said, I submitted my written testimony. Really what this is attempted to do is make sure that those special ed students, you know, get the education they need as quickly as possible, that student records are transferred as quickly as possible, that state school fund payments are transferred as quickly as possible, that you don't have two school districts and a charter school all trying to figure out the IEP and who's responsible for what portion of the special ed and how are we going to bill for these services and who's going to pay for it. It makes it simple. Where the kid goes to school is responsible for the education of that student and all the state school fund monies follow that kid to the school district, so ostensibly we get rid of these problems. And as Cindy said, we heard from some school districts since this has passed the House, there's been some other legislation that's at the governor's desk. We've heard from some school districts with some concerns about the mechanics. So we do have some amendments that are just about ready. Those amendments really do four things: make sure the records are transferred as quickly as possible, make sure the state school fund payments are made as quickly as possible. Again, as Cindy said, make it consistent with current law and some bills that have passed this session. And for us, the most important thing is we've heard from some school districts that it creates some paperwork mandate burdens that they believe are unnecessary, so it'll pull some of that stuff out and streamline the process. But again, the intent is make sure those special ed kids are treated the same as any other student that attends a regular brick and mortar or an online school or a charter school in Oregon. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
We move on to Karen.
Sure. My name is Karen Heikes. I'm with the Northwest Center for Educational Options here today representing charter schools, and we are in support of this bill and the concept and have been for quite a few years. We've been all working on this together for several years, and certainly support the amendments that Morgan and Cindy have described to you conceptually, and we're going to work on those with them. We have been hearing from our charter schools for quite a few years that the way the law is set up has been very challenging for their kids. And one of the biggest complaints that we've received, the way the funding works is that the sponsoring district receives the first ADM, but the resident district receives the second ADM, and that resident district is supposed to pass that on to the charter schools, and in many cases, they don't. So we've had charter schools serving kids on IEPs without any money at all from anybody. They haven't received their ADM weight, not even the first one. So that's been a problem. Like about half of these kids that we're talking about, the charter school serving them has never gotten payment for those kids. So we knew that was a problem, but then last year we found out that about half those kids weren't even getting the services in their IEP that they were supposed to be getting. So then we thought, well, is it a compliance issue? You know, the law should stay the same, but we should just enforce to make sure that the kids are getting their services and the charters are getting their funding to provide those services. But ultimately, as Morgan said, it comes down to equity and treating the kids in charter schools, wherever they live, treating them equitably, making sure that they're adequately funded, making sure they're getting the services required by their IEP. So we definitely support this bill, and we'll continue to work on it, and we'll welcome any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I just want to make sure I understand, because you're talking about amendments that we don't have yet, that the intent of the amendment is to clarify that this is consistent with other bills that have already passed?
Chair Haas and Senator Bonamici, I think the thing that I should have said about the amendments, and then I'll let Cindy maybe talk about some more of the detail, is that the amendments won't change the underlying intent of the bill, which is to make those special ed students who choose to attend a charter school outside of their resident district residents of the sponsoring district. So the main piece of this, which is what everyone wants, the amendments don't change that. It sort of deals with the quickness of the state school fund payments, the quickness of record transfers and IEP files and things like that transferring, and it would take out some cumbersome and unwieldy forms and reporting requirements for school districts and charter schools. So we're trying to streamline it as possible. And that's feedback we've heard since it's passed the House from our school districts and some other folks. So we're trying to just make it as smooth as possible, the transition.
Okay, and can I ask a follow-up, please, Mr. Chair? And just so I see some nodding heads, are these consensus amendments?
At this point, Senator Haas and Senator Bonamici, we have contacted Representative Gelser and Representative Wingard's office, the co-chairs of the House Education Committee that passed this bill. I believe it passed the House unanimously. Okay. We've talked to them conceptually, their offices conceptually, about what the amendments do. We got the note to get the amendments from Representative Gelser. We're going to share them with both Representative Gelser and Representative Wingard, Karen, Gary, other people, to make sure that everyone's okay with the changes. But again, the amendments are really an attempt to streamline it, to make it as smooth and efficient as possible for those state school fund payments, records transfers, and get these kids the services they need as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Gary, sorry to pull you forward and put you in the on-deck position.
Chair Chair Haas and members of the committee. My name is Gary Temple. For the record, we sponsor Lourdes Public Charter School, which is one of the smallest charter schools in the state, and Orca, which is one of the largest online charter schools in the state. So I'm going to start with my conclusion, which is there's like 105 charter schools. For 105 charter schools in the state, this bill will be easier for them. There's 198 districts in the state. For 197 of them, this bill will be easier for them. The only one that's going to create more work for is me, but it's the right thing to do for kids. So with that, I'll tell you a little bit more how the work in our world. So for regular districts, what typically happens is we would provide in a regular district, you know, whether it be Silverton or Salem having a charter school in their district, they would provide special ed services to the kids that were from their district. And then the surrounding districts that had kids in that charter school would send someone to serve those kids. So in this case, the sponsoring district then would provide that services. So it would be more efficient for everybody, because they're already there serving the other kids, to just serve the extra kid. So that's the way it will work in the regular brick-and-mortar charter schools. In the online world, what we will do is we will turn around and contract with the sending district to provide services. One of the things that we have found is no one really knows who's supposed to provide the services. And so when you talk to sending districts, they're like, well, you know, who's doing that? And the way it's supposed to be now is they're supposed to be doing that. So this will help us ensure that those kids are getting services. We will contract back with them, and hopefully they'll be able to establish a relationship with that student. And I think that would be better for everybody. And then in return, one of the things you do with an IEP is you do a progress report every 9 weeks so you can, you know, tell how they're doing towards their specially designed instruction. And so in return, they'll provide that back to us so that, you know, there's a closed loop in that system. So with that being said, I would say there's one more piece to this, and that is accountability. Currently, we are not held accountable for the special ed students that are in our district. So we provide the education. We are not held accountable for those test scores. That's not okay. So if we're providing the education, we should be held accountable for those scores and for those services. And so with that, I will close and tell you this is the right thing to do for kids, and take any questions.
Questions?
No, thank you.
All righty then.
Appreciate it. There's no one else here to testify on House Bill 2299. I'll close the public hearing, and we will await these amendments for further action. Thank you. I'm going to break out of the order we said we would go into for purposes of taking up House Bill 2939, and I'd like to go into a work session on House Bill 2939, and we have two representatives, the co-chairs of the Ed Committee here, Representative Gulser and Representative Winger. Yeah, Senator George, maybe this is a place for you to weigh in. You have an amendment on the restraints bill that
colleagues
discussed the other day.
Colleagues, after our last hearing, Representative Gulser convinced me that I think this is good public policy. I'm just concerned that we implement this and then it's difficult to come back from it if we find that we've created problems, safety problems in the classroom. And so I requested that the Dash A-10s be drafted, which puts a sunset on this bill for June 30th, 2017, would give us time to evaluate the policy. And if we don't like it, then if the policy is good and it's working in the classrooms, then we can repeal the sunset. I've talked to the two co-chairs, and I appreciate your flexibility. Honestly, I do. And so it seems that they've agreed that this is a friendly amendment that they could concur with on the House side.
Please. Thank you, Senator George. Representatives, is seem okay with you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Sarah Gelser, State Representative from House District 16 and co-chair of the House Education Committee. As long as it is only a sunset, and it's my understanding we will have assurance that there will be concurrence in the House, then I am perfectly comfortable with this. I think it will also give us the opportunity to go back to districts and actually ensure that districts are complying with this, because as part of that review, we can see how it's rolling out in the districts, given that we took all of the appeal processes out when we were in the House.
Mr. Chair, Matt Wingard, House District 26. I concur that to use a phrase, that this is a good policy. The idea of adding the sunset is excellent to force the review, and I'm happy to concur on the House side to these amendments.
Okay. Have you seen the amendments?
Yes.
The record, and the one that, did you say it was a dash?
Dash 10s.
Because it does this too.
But we think that just puts the language back in.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may, the second section where there's language that is added back in, there's another part of the statute outside the education statute that talks about the use of physical force, and in this legislation, we amended that section of law. So when we sunset it, we need to restore the language that currently exists in that part of the law, and that's what that section does. And that's sections 9 and 11 there, and you'll find at the very bottom it says that those become effective on September 1st of 2017.
Okay. All right. Thank you both. We don't have the paperwork ready for this amendment, but we will hopefully, committee willing, adopt this amendment on Thursday.
Or we could adopt the amendment today and then...
Could we adopt the amendment now?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. And let's do that. We're in work sessions.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash 10 amendments to House Bill 2938 dated 5/16/11.
2939.
What did I say? House Bill 2939?
A engrossed.
Yeah. Senator Morris moves to adopt the Dash 10 amendments to 2939A. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I wanted to offer my thanks to Senator George and yourself and Representative Wingard for their help in getting this done. I appreciate it very much. And Representative Wingard, thank you very much.
It's a good policy. I'm glad it's going to move.
Thank you.
Thank you. I close the work session on Senate Bill 2939 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3298. Linda?
House Bill 3298 provides that the governing body of a county is the District Boundary Board for purposes of school boundary changes and mergers of school districts. There is a proposed amendment that requires the District Boundary Board to identify and give notice to persons affected by a boundary change. A change or merger becomes effective if a remonstrance petition on the change or merger is not submitted. If a remonstrance is submitted and meets certain requirements, the District Boundary Board is to submit the question of change or merger to the electors.
That's okay. What the amendment does. Well, to help us flesh this out, let's start with Steve Cafori, David Honeycutt, and Ed Bartholomew.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of House Bill 3298. This is a bill that came out of the House Education Committee on a unanimous vote and passed the House floor 60-0. It has not been amended. The bill came out clean. Current law authorizes boundary changes brought by a affected property owner or a group of affected property owners through the gathering of signatures from both districts and a petition then filed with the local ESD. The ESD board then acts on that petition and approves the boundary change unless there is a remonstrance petition filed. That's the current law. It's been that way for quite some time. And the important point to note about House Bill 3298 is that we are not trying to change any of that petitioning process. The petitioning process that exists in current law would remain the same under House Bill 3298, and I think that was an important consideration on the House side, and the reason, the primary reason why this bill came out unanimously out of the House Education Committee and off the House floor. What this bill does, it does only one thing. It simply provides that rather than having the Education Service District Board act as the local elections officer, this is the only area of the law where you have an ESD board acting as the local elections officer. Rather than having them do that for purposes of verifying signatures and making sure that you meet the requirements for having a proper petition and all of that, this bill changes that and makes the county elections officer the person that's responsible for the conduct of the signature, of verifying the signatures and making sure that the signature sheets are appropriate. We discovered, or Mr. Bartholomew, the requester of the bill, discovered when attempting to do this in the last couple of years that the Education Service District Board really don't have the expertise or knowledge of how to comply with elections law, and obviously in this state we place our reliance on local elections in the hands of the county elections officials who are trained and certainly knowledgeable in how to do that. And so rather than wading into an argument over whether or not the required number of signatures should change, whether the notice requirements should change, or anything of that nature, we simply, and all this bill does is simply provide that we're going to place the conduct of the process that currently exists in the law in the hands of the local elections official who knows, in this case, what she's talking about. So that's what this bill does. It's a very modest change, and we certainly would ask the committee to support it.
Dave, we don't see you in the Education Committee very
much. Mr. Chair, I sit on the House side. This is the first time in my 14 years in this building that I've been in the House Education Committee, and hopefully the last. And I'll say the same thing in the Senate Education Committee. Unless you start talking about comprehensive plans or zoning ordinances, you probably won't see me again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Gaffori. I'm representing the South Cooper Mountain Landowners Association. And this is, this session, the first time that Dave Honeycutt and I have sat together at the table. And we've done it actually on several bills this session. And it's been, I must say, a pleasure. You've heard a very good description of the bill from Mr. Honeycutt. And the only thing I can add to it is that this bill does not increase or decrease the ability of a change from one district to another district. It does not make it harder to change the boundary or easier to change the boundary. It makes it just simpler in terms of who actually handles that process and has people who know how to do it. In that vein, we would resist any amendments, because we talked to the proposer of those amendments when the bill was in the House. They asked us to be on this bill. We said we didn't want it there, and we would ask that it not be placed on the Senate. Anything that would be added to the bill would make it either more difficult or more easy for a person to change the boundary, and that's not what this bill does. So we would ask you to pass the bill unamended and keep it clean. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Ed Bartholomew from Cooper Mountain. I just want to come down and answer any questions you might have. It's really a housekeeping issue. We found there's a lot of confusion between the two agencies, and we hope that if it was all in one place, it would help that.
Could you give us an idea of what kind of confusion you ran into?
Well, the form that the school districts gave us to fill out turned out to be illegal, and it appeared that the ESD was in charge, but really the county was in charge, but they didn't know it, so they kept sending us back to the ESD, and that's the type. And me and my neighbors, you know, spent a year working on collecting all the signatures and doing everything we were supposed to do, and it all just got thrown out.
Can you tell us the scope or size of the development that you want in that area? That I realize we're talking about a larger change, but could you tell us the could you describe the project sort of what?
Well, actually, they keep wanting to tie this to our wish to be in the city of Beaverton, but we started this before any of the urban reserve stuff existed, and it was just an efficiency of service. There's kids in our area that spend an hour each way to school, and you know Beaverton's getting ready to build a new high school next door to my property. And you know, it just seems ridiculous for kids to you know spend that much time on a bus when they could just walk to school.
Good questions, Senator Morris. Oh. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Ozzy Rose, Mike Scott, Nina Carlson, your team.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Ozzy Rose. I reside here in Salem, and I represent the school districts in Washington County. And I'm here to promote addition of an amendment to this bill. What you've heard so far is very accurate. Currently, the process, the Boundary Board doesn't make any decisions about the transfer of property. And all they make decisions about are, was the process correct? And moving that from the ESD to the county commissioners doesn't change anything. Their responsibility will be just to make the process work. And they probably have better tools than the ESD board does. But it doesn't change the issue of can they make a decision about the correctness of changing the boundaries or not. Under current law, if two or more local districts agree on a boundary change, the boundary board issues the order and it's done. And if the school districts do not agree on the boundary change, then a party who wants the change may file a prospective petition with the county and indicating the intent to obtain signatures to ask the boundary board to issue the order. If they get the required signatures, then the board issues the order, and then if there are folks who object to the order, they have to file a prospective petition process with the county and go out and get signatures. To say we don't want this to happen, that forces election. They vote in the smaller district first, and if it's successful, then the citizens of the larger district vote. And so the process is really controlled by the citizens. The amendment that we have before you, dash ones, leave the move from the ESD to the county because we think that's probably a good idea. But there are several things that we think in the process that ought to be changed to make it a more thorough and balanced process. The two things that we're asking for in this amendment is that all of the property owners within the affected area get notified that this is going on. And the second is that the opponents who are trying to force the election get more time to get the signatures. The proponents of the idea, they have as long as they want. They file a petition and they can take as long as they want till they get enough signatures. The process now is if the citizens want to oppose that order once it's been issued, they have to file a petition and they have to get their signatures within 20 days. And the district can't organize those folks. The citizens have to organize this effort on their own. And 20 days isn't a very long time, especially when you put it against the unlimited time that the proponents of the measure offer. So we encourage you By the way, Mr. Honeycutt's remarks were correct. It was in the House. We did offer, over there, we offered 7 ideas that we thought would improve the process. And we were told if the proponents of the bill would agree to it, we could have those. And they didn't. We met twice and talked it through, and we couldn't come to any agreement. And so on this side, we're offering 2 ideas that we think increase the fairness and increase the ability to serve the kids in the protected area. And with the 2 people with me, one is Mike Scott. He's a superintendent of Hillsborough School District, whose land is proposed to move. And Nina Carlson, a citizen in the Beaverton School District, who was involved in the petition process to refer it to vote. With that, I'll answer your questions, or you can ask the other people to speak
we'll
first.
Let them complete their presentation first.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to share my thoughts. And just for the record, Nina is a member of the Hillsborough School District, not the Beaverton School District. So I just wanted to clear that up. I'm here to share my
transferred.
Yeah. I'm here to share my support for the 2 amendments that
are. Can you identify yourself?
Yeah, Mike Scott, superintendent of the Hillsborough School District. I'm here today to share my support for these 2 amendments. Really, there's a couple issues at hand. One is the notice to those folks that are impacted, those folks that live in the area that are directly impacted by the possibility of a move from one school district to another school district. Our community members are very invested in the local school district, and particularly in the outlying area, our patrons are strong supporters of the Hillsborough School District, and they have a strong sense of community. And I would just urge that they have the opportunity to be notified when an event like this is taking place. In terms of the remonstrance period, again, I would second what Ozzie had mentioned, that the petitioner has adequate time to share their thoughts and to gather these signatures, and I would ask that we give our community adequate time to form a response to that as well. We value the input of our community over and over again as we go about issues in the school district. We seek the input of the community, but we do that in a very mindful and deliberate way, and I would ask that we do the same here with these amendments. And finally, I would say that just having a fair process with adequate opportunity for our community input is critical for us. The event that necessitated this particular hearing and started this whole process, while it doesn't include many students right now, the fact that significant acreage would be moving from one school district to another school district really does inhibit our ability to plan and project in a very meaningful way. If you look at the South Hillsborough area where this land is located, we have property throughout the South Hillsborough area where building is going to be taking place. It's estimated that in the next 10 years within that area, there's going to be an additional 6,000 students that will be of growth taking place within the Hillsborough School District. So while there's always a piece of property that abuts next to the next school district, plans are underway and we are planning for that growth.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I'm Nina Carlson, a Hillsborough School District patron and one of the remonstrance signature gatherers. I just want to give a little bit of a personal feel. We were notified through a lady who had heard that the Boundary Board had this petition filed and that this move was going to happen unless we as community members didn't get our act together. We had 20 days not only to gather signatures but to inform our community. And our community is a rural school, not a lot of kids, so any loss of property or any loss of any children really affects our enrollment and the number of students that will be allocated from the district. We, like I said, we are a rural school district. There is nowhere in our school district that has sidewalks that kids walk to school. So we had 20 days to inform our community and get out the word to get some signatures. And that's a big undertaking for people who are not trained at any of this sort of thing. I mean, this hit us out of the blue. And I think it's highly unreasonable for a homeowner or a patron to have 1 year to gather signatures and then the other side to have nearly 20 days. I don't see the fairness in that. And even when we did get the signatures, all we were asking is for the democratic process to unfold and allow our patrons to have a vote whether we wanted this land to go to Beaverton or not. So we're not saying, oh, you can't do that. We're just merely asking for the time to gather those signatures and make sure that our community has a chance to vote and be vested in this decision, because it will affect all of us. And I'll leave it at that and take any questions you have.
Thank you. Nina, let me ask you, is the fear here of losing potential bodies to the school district?
Not only potential bodies, but also the planning aspect. I mean, that is an area that is going to grow. I live probably about 1 mile from this area, and I talked to one of the students in my son's class, the mom, and I said, by the way, did you know that your daughter will be going to Beaverton High School or Beaverton School District next year if this comes to pass? And she was shocked. She had no idea that this was going to happen, and she just was like, what are you talking about? I said, yes, this happens to you, and there is nothing we can do about it other than try and get enough signatures so we can have a vote.
Hypothetically, if I may follow up, this is right in front of you here. If this were happening in Bend, would you feel as strongly about it?
Well, I'm also on the district budgeting committee. I've been on the bond panel, so I'm pretty vested in what it takes to run a district, or all the hard work Mike and his staff do to plan for the future. And I can't see how a school district can have land taken from them or given to them in kind of a all of a sudden manner and be able to plan for that. In addition, I just really, if this is what the community thinks is best, that's what the community thinks is best. But I think the community should have a say what happens to their school, not just have it dictated to them or have only a short period of time to even force a vote.
Senator George?
See, here's my problem. And here's my problem. Obviously, this is happening in the middle of my district. So
it's your problem.
I got a lot of issues. Yes. And I don't have a problem having a broader discussion about how the process works. What we do right now is have a process and state statute that the legislature has laid out for this process. And this right now is a very clean issue, which is who is the elections officer? And really, I'd be willing to work with all of you during the interim to try to change this process. What you're actually asking me to do in this situation is add in amendments that tries to pick sides in what should be a statewide negotiation on how we change this boundary discussion. So I can't support amendments to this bill, because this is just simply who is the elections officer. But I commit to you that even though I won't support the amendments, I am interested in the issue, and I'll work with you guys to try to figure out how we could push and pull on this process. But this is the current process, and this bill only addresses who the elections officer is. And I'd like to keep it clean and then kick the conversation you guys are talking about into some kind of broader discussion. And so I didn't know because you said you had 7 different changes, and I didn't know if this was...
Yep.
There's probably a lot of interest statewide in this issue.
Well, there's interest in other districts when not many issues come this way. Most of the boundary changes are worked out and they happen. But any district in the state that would have, I think there's over 100 acres being looked at to move from one district. That's a significant issue for the district that's losing 100 acres, both in terms of assessed value for its capital needs and bonding, and in terms of the numbers of students they'll have. In our formula, the way it works in Oregon, as you know, it's driven by $1 per student. And you go check with any district that's losing kids and then one that's increasing kids and talk to them about the difference in their problems. The growing district is much better off than a declining enrollment. So it has broad implications for the school districts. You are correct. The bill, as it came out of the House, is very simple. And by the way, that again, we agree that probably happened because the county has the expertise to run elections and so forth. So in fact, I'm not exactly sure what the ESD did or didn't do, but both parties, both signature gatherers, for and against it, didn't file a pre-petition with the county, and that's why it finally wound up not getting approved. So that part's true. We just see a way to fix it better than that, and so we've tried to give you that opportunity.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. obviously this is a bill that was brought because of something that's happening in Senator George's district, apparently. But I'm trying to figure out, I can't tell from looking at the bill if it's going to apply to this current situation, if it's going to apply, what's the status of in the timing of where you are right now? Is this going to impact the decision, or has the decision already been made in your situation?
Madam Chair, or excuse me, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonamici, if we don't do anything, the proponents of doing this, of moving this property, would function under current rules, go out and get their signatures, only it would go to the county commissioners rather than the ESD board. And if the county commissioners ruled on it, and the only ruling they can make is they've got the signatures and they say the exchange is going to happen, then Nina and her friends go out and get signatures and try to stop it. So the process, if nothing happens except the bill, the process would function this fall or whenever you want to do it, with the one exception, the ESD board would not be running an election, the county would be.
Senator Bartlett. Yes, my understanding that it's already on, we're sort of in the middle of it. Is that correct or not? It got thrown out.
It
got thrown out over the issue of filing these pre
Thank you. I'm sorry I missed that part.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Senator George.
Senator Bonamici, the situation was is that both parties went to the ESD as
right.
the elections officer, and the ESD did it wrong. So
okay.
the question is that what should have happened is somebody who knows how to run elections should have been running this election, and that's the simple issue that's being
discussed.
No disagreement with that statement.
Further questions, Senator George?
Thank you. Once the remonstrance is filed, then the entire district votes under current law?
Under current law, the smaller district votes, but the entire district votes first. And if it's approved, then, like in this case, Hillsborough is a smaller district. They would have voted, or if they do this again, would vote. If it's successful in Hillsborough, then it would go to Beaverton and be voted on in Beaverton. And if there were three districts involved, it would go from the smallest to the largest in those three.
But once someone votes it down, then it's done.
Yes.
It's done.
Yeah. And one of the issues, there is ambiguity in the law over who pays for the elections. You read the law one way, that's one of the things on our list. If you read the law one way, each district pays for its own election. If you read it another way, the cost of the total two or three elections is divided equally amongst the two or three school districts.
Senator Morris.
It looks to me, Mr. Chair, that either way this statute is written, it would be very, very difficult to do a boundary change if you have the entire district making a decision for a group of people who's... I could see if my children had an opportunity to walk to school or very close proximity to a school versus being bused a long distance, I might want that as well. One question I do have is the amendment in line 10, identify persons who would be affected by a boundary change and provide notice by mail. Who would those people be? That's a very broad, conceivably, that would be every member.
It was supposed to be the property owners within the boundaries of the... I don't know if it reads that way or not, but that was the instructions to the drafters. It's the property owners within the boundary that's going to be moved.
The district boundary board must identify persons who would be affected by a boundary change. So how would the reading of that... Cindy, you're the attorney. Is that just those residing within the area that to be changed, or is that those affected by the entire
city?
May I respond?
Or within the
while she's coming up. Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, until you raised that question, it was just those in the affected area. When you read it to me that way, you got a point, Senator.
Cindy Hunt, Department of Education. I would give you the suggestion I would have given you about 6 years ago, which was if it's ambiguous, I'm always in favor of making it less ambiguous. So if the intent is to only have it be the property, you know, that's being transferred from one district to the next, I would suggest clarifying the amendment. Whereas if the intent is for it to be the entire, you know, two school districts, I would suggest clarifying it in that way.
Thank you, Cindy. The next time you come, we're going to have a couch. Okay. If there's no further comments or questions, I'm going to close the public hearing. Nina?
May I make one more comment?
Sure.
Thank you, Chairman and Senators. The only thing, I understand what you were saying about it would be a very difficult process. That's only if we as private citizens run around like chickens to get those 500 signatures. And we had 10 people getting 500 signatures. We live in a big, big district and a big rural area. I burned many tanks of gas, wore out my phone. It was a big deal to try and alert people to what was happening that would possibly affect their school in a large way. So it wasn't, I understand when it goes to a vote, it may be a little more difficult or it may be a little bit more onerous, but it was certainly onerous to at least allow the patrons of that school and the district to have the opportunity to decide whether they wanted to lose that land or not.
Senator Morris? How many signatures were you able to gather?
Well, my little group, I think, brought about 375, and then we had some PTA and some other members in a school in town gather some as well through just, you know, friends, baseball teams, that kind of thing, because it does affect the whole district. But in our rural area, we had community meetings. We attended Grange meetings, Boy Scout troop things. We really worked it. I can understand what rural signature gatherers have to go through on a daily basis, but we did it over long distance.
Just as an additional follow-up.
Senator Morris?
If the bill is adopted as it is written without the dash ones, you will still have your remonstrance and an ability to refer it to the voters.
Yes, we'll still have that ability, provided that someone catches that a petition has been filed. I mean, if we hadn't had our eyes open, we would have never known this was happening. If someone hadn't tipped us off and said, hey, did you guys know you have a potential of losing 1,660 acres? We would have never done this, and it would have been done before we even knew what hit us.
Senator Barney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ozzy might need to come back up, maybe. And I'm sorry I didn't think of this when you were up here. So we have Mr. Scott here, Superintendent Scott from Hillsborough, but obviously this is happening between Hillsborough and Beaverton. So is Beaverton going to weigh in on this? And I understand this is policy that would apply to the whole state, but obviously it's being brought because of a particular situation. 6,000 students is a lot of students.
Yes. Ms. Chair, Senator Bonamici, I've talked 3 times with the Beaverton superintendent about this issue, and they have no intention of, or they have no interest in getting the land. And they don't view themselves as involved in this battle in the sense that it's a Hillsborough's issue, not theirs.
And they're neutral on this bill.
And they're neutral on the bill, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3298, and we're not going to go into a work session on it today. And so that clears our agenda today. And to the committee, I would say I would, in getting ready for Thursday, I would say that probably the biggest black mark we have on our educational system is our low high school graduation rate. And on Thursday, we're going to have some people in here to speak to us on that, to help us brainstorm, and to look at that issue a little more in depth than we have so far this year. So that's what's on deck Thursday. I hope you're all here and ready to brainstorm. With that, and with no other business before us, we are adjourned.